Good afternoon, WVS 103.7 to be serving Muskegon, Muskegon Heights. It's time for Torn Into, your show for news, information, and more. I am so excited about today's show. But before we talk about today's show, I have to do some housekeeping. If you are on the road and would like to see this interview, you can always go to WVS 103.7 to beat or M106 Facebook sites or media sites. We have a YouTube site as well. Do not forget about the emoji app, which we'll do at the bottom of the hour to let you know how you can watch this interview again, because this one is a very, very important interview. I have to talk to you about the weather. There's a winter weather advisory going on. So make sure that you have those batteries, those flashlights, ready for heat. Just be ready. It hasn't hit us yet. Okay. It was supposed to start at 10. It hasn't hit us yet. Okay. One thing that I got to do, and Melvin is not on yet, is I got to do this, is I got to put this on real quick, and I got to go hail to the victors for being champions. I got to get that in. For all you state people, Ohio State people, sorry. No, I'm not. All right. So anyway, the weather for the next couple of days, today, high 34, 90% chance of snow. Tomorrow, Saturday, 50% chance of snow, high of 33, low of 22. Sunday, high of 22, and the temperature starts to drop, 12. Monday, high of 14, low of 11, partly sunny. Tuesday, high of 12, low of 8. Wednesday, high of 25, low of 90 degrees, and very windy. Thursday, high of 24, low of 18. And Friday, high of 18, low of 8. Let's get to the point. There is a problem in this country. When something happens in our past, let's take World War I, World War II, the Civil War, it's called, at the end, history. Who wins? Who lost? It's called history. Slavery happened. And in spite of what Nikki Haley would say, that it was about government, it was about slavery. History is history, okay? There's a faction of people out there that are trying to erase history for various reasons. And boy, did we find the guest for you today. She has a book called The System That Shaped Black America. Now, here's a great thing about her. Not only is her book booming, 4.6 stars on Amazon, 4.5 stars on every other site. This book is considered to be a great book. It's 160 pages. She did that for a reason. I'm going to let her talk about it. Without that said, Melvin's coming on shortly. With that said, put your hands together for our very own Tracy Bruce. And let me see if I can get her on. How you doing?
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on. It's always nice to be able to speak with one of your hometown heroes. So I'm just excited to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Let's go to board. People are clapping for you already. Listen, let's get into the show, okay? We have a lot to talk about. A matter of fact, we're going to have you back on because you can't talk about this subject in 45, 50 minutes, okay? Would you tell Muskegon and Muskegon Heights, the county of Muskegon, a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a proud Muskegon Heights gander, if that's a word. Born and raised in Muskegon Heights. Graduated from Muskegon Heights public school system. Some of my best times ever. Grew up with a very strong family support system here in Muskegon Heights. I'm a Bruce, which I do have an uncle and an aunt here that's popular. My dad moved here in the late 70s, at the end of the migration, southern migration, the northern migration. Then I'm also a Ray. So many people know the Rays here. My granddaddy is Sim Ray. The Smith Ryerson Center was recently renamed to honor him. And so
well deserved, by the way.
Well deserved, yes. We're so proud. And so I'm just Muskegon Heights through and through. Graduated from Muskegon Heights, went to Grand Valley State University. And let me do a quick little plug out. I went to Grand Valley State University on a full academic scholarship, which Brother James Rowan, you know, Rowan Park, he played a major part in that, my scholarship going to college. So I've just always been blessed by the Muskegon Heights community. Went to Grand Valley, studied marketing, and then entered corporate America. Been in corporate America for over 20 years. I started off here in West Michigan for Charter Communications. Then I moved to Atlanta, Georgia for 12 years, where I was able to work for Starbucks Coffee Company and their corporate office, as well as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. Mm-hmm. Most recently, I worked at Herman Miller, which is now Miller Knowles. So just had a great, successful career as far as corporate America. And yeah, so like I said, I'm a Muskegon native. I moved back about 7 years ago and just been a part of the community, enjoying family and friends, and happened upon writing a book about Black history.
Now, first of all, what do you say about the people that just kind of stay around and don't venture out when they can venture out like you did?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's a personal preference, right? When I moved to Atlanta, I came from having this huge family support system, so not knowing many people down there. So it was a shock, and it took a lot of courage and, you know, kind of just ripped me out of my comfort zone. So I think that it was beneficial. Things went well for me. So I think that if someone has the desire to do it, I say go for it. You can always come back home, but you never know what type of opportunities and great things await you outside of Muskegon as well.
Okay. Welcome to the show, Pastor Melvin Burns. How you doing, sir?
Good. How are y'all doing this afternoon?
I've got to do that for you. Get that right there.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Apologize. Okay.
It's not like I don't do this every week, but had trouble getting in today.
Okay, that's okay. All right, so we're talking to Tracy Bruce. Now, you wrote this book. What made you decide to write this book?
Yeah, so every time someone asks me about myself, you know, I just gave a quick synopsis. Nothing about me at this point would say why I wrote a Black history book, other than the obvious of me being a Black woman, right? But I consider my several defining moments in my life that led to this book. It started just as a young girl. From the time I was 3 or 4 years old, my dad would sit me down and my two sisters and talk to us about history. He was a history buff. Mm-hmm. So he would speak to us about family history, American history, Black history. I mean, he would talk for hours and hours. At the time, I didn't appreciate it. I was like 3 or 4 years old. I'm ready to go to bed. My mom would yell at him, let the girls go to bed. Let the girls go to bed. Because he would go on to late in the night. And then, you know, at the time, I couldn't appreciate it. But as I grew older, I started to turn into him. So now I'm the person at the family functions with my nieces and nephews, sitting them down, telling them about the family history, Black history, and why it's important. And so that just kind of started off why I love history so much. And then I was blessed to be able to go to New Hope Baptist Church growing up. So Deacon James Rowan would do the annual Black History program. So I learned a lot from him just participating in those programs year after year after year. And then, you know, I just continued to just kind of, as I grew, I would watch documentaries, read a lot about the civil rights movement, and just kind of did a lot of studying on my own. Did some history courses in college, but it wasn't really ever centered around Black history. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to the 2020 presidential election, and now we have social media. So I get to see all these thoughts around particularly why Black people don't want to vote and why they think it's not important. And we start seeing attacks on Black history. And so I really wanted to write a book about, it wasn't, to be honest, it wasn't a book. It was a group of flashcards. I just wanted to get something out really quickly, couple hit, get to the point, something quick for people to read and move forward. But as I started the flashcard idea, I felt like I wasn't telling a complete story. So it kind of turned into a book of many lessons. And then I started writing the book and then George Floyd died. So that opened up the world to kind of be concerned with racial equity issues. It seemed like a spotlight got put on racism at that point. So my book expanded, and then my company that I worked for, Miller Knoll, selected me to be a part of the CEO Action for Racial Equity Fellowship. So this was a fellowship that over 100 large American companies selected fellows to work on racial equity issues. So corporations in America wanted to get involved. They started paying attention to racial equity needs and inequities in the Black community. And so they wanted to get involved with solutions. So in this fellowship, we worked on public policy solutions. How can we change laws, as well as things we could do internally within our organizations that we were calling social contracts. And so I ended up leading a team that was focused on declaring racism a public health crisis and started connecting all the different ways that racism impacts every area of our lives and how it ultimately impacts our health. And so, yeah. And so, that being a part of that fellowship just opened me up to being taught by scholars, lawmakers. I mean, we had congresswomen and men come and speak to us, different grassroots leaders. It just opened up a different world. So my book, actually, the more I learned from these experts, I added to the book, and the book actually took a year longer than what I planned. I had started telling people, advertising the book, and then it just kept being delayed. I kept adding to it and adding to it and adding to it. So it took a year longer than what I planned for me to publish.
Let's go to the board already. From Georgia, Tanya Roberts Ford. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening, Tanya. We have people all over that are interested. we'll go to that question. I may as well. Brother, you look like Uncle Tang. Stop it. All right. Kelly, better late than never, especially to put out a masterpiece.
Thanks,
so
Kelly.
People are coming out flying with stuff. So listen, more and more intake, more and more events are happening. Here's my first question. What are people so afraid of when it comes down to the history of African Americans? And how we play a part of this country?
Yeah, that is a loaded question, right? I think that part of it has to do with some in our community, some Americans not wanting to acknowledge blank, or they don't want to look at their ancestors in an unfavorable way. I think it also has to do with some not recognizing their privilege, because as we know, slaveholders were like the top 1% of Americans that we see today. So your Bill Gates, a lot of our multimillionaires. And so we know that they had major influence with local and national politics, and they were able to shape laws and establish institutions that benefited their children and other white Americans that maybe didn't have anything to do with slavery, but benefited from laws such as the Jim Crow laws, right? And so from that, we know that generational wealth and privilege have played a part in American history. So I think some just don't want to acknowledge that they had a leg up, you know, and that it's better to just try to ignore something versus face it. And point blank, slavery was wrong. is what it is. And some people just want to, you know, remember their ancestors in such a positive light, but nobody is perfect. And we have to be honest.
That's right. And not to even mention that slave owners, some slave owners got reparations, but we won't go there.
Yes. They got reparations, but
they got reparations, but not the people that
did work for free. And then I just want to talk a little bit about slavery. It lasted 246 years. So if you think of a generation being 25 years, that's 10 generations. So if you think that it's not, you know, a benefit when it comes to generational wealth and generational power after 10 generations, then you're sadly mistaken. It just is what it is.
People are just buzzing up. Where can you purchase a book? And people are already interested. Here's the website. Let's go to the website at www.theetnb.com.
Yeah. So my initials are TNB. So my website is the TNB. And so on the website, and thanks for who's ever inquiring, I appreciate it. But we have the hard copy books and we also have ebooks available. So if you want to do an electronic version, that's available as well. And then you also have the option, if you would like me to sign and send you one, I could certainly do that as well.
All right, question coming to you, Pastor Burns.
From Tanya Roberts Ford. That's why people, especially here in the South, I'm trying to change what's being taught about slavery.
Yeah, and it's so unfortunate. And, you know, and we're seeing that it's gaining momentum. So it started in Florida, right, where Governor Ron DeSantis was successful in changing a lot of the, in changing the legislation, which prohibits, which decides what can be taught and what can't be taught around slavery. But we're also now seeing other states following suit. So Texas is starting to follow suit. Arkansas, yes. A lot of the southern states are following suit as well. So I think, you know, that wasn't the reason why I wrote the book, but I feel like now is a good time to get this information out there. And I'm pretty sure if I was in Florida, it would be on the ban list.
Right. Pastor Burns.
And this is not a promo for your company, but you know, today we're hearing companies kind of pushing back against DEI and those things. Is it important that corporations like yours understand the history of slavery as they exist today?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like, you know, we're a few years out from George Floyd, so it's starting to shift a lot. 4 years ago, companies were very involved, and now we're starting to slowly see the trickle of getting rid of DEI. But yeah, I had the opportunity to present several times. Miller Noel did a book club series where they bought books, and we did a 6 weeks book club surrounding a book. I did several presentations just talking about the importance of having empathy in a workplace and how knowing history can lead to empathy and how your struggle might be different than mine. And so, yeah, I think it's very important. And in fact, it's been other companies that I presented to that have, you know, their board of directors have read the book and in turn have had their employees read the book. In fact, I'm going through a curriculum right now with an organization here in Michigan, well, in Holland. And so, yeah, I think it's very important. And a lot of people welcome the information. It was like, we were never taught this, and just kind of, you know, gave an eye open. It became an eye opener. And like I said, increased empathy a lot, because it's not like I wrote this book to get some sort of sympathy for the Black community. I just want to put it out there that I feel like a lot of times, especially when you come from Muskegon Heights, like I did, that there is a stereotype that somehow your school system is inferior. If you live in an all Black, you know, city that's don't have the funding as some of the surrounding cities, that you're somehow, you know, not on the same level as others. And if you go to college like I did, you're somehow, you know, not necessarily deserving. You just kind of, you know, get a hookup and, you know, someone felt sorry for you. So I wrote the book to show that, you know, a lot of these things were intentional. A lot of our neighborhoods that are still segregated to this day, that's by design. You know, a lot of communities, it is harder to get into college because they don't have the same amount of wealth as others, and it was by design. So I kind of want to break the notion of just somehow all Black communities are somewhat inferior to other communities. And on the same token, I wanted to let a lot of Black youth know all, you know, paint a picture of different policies and procedures and systems that happen to let them know how we ended up to this point, and to almost use it as a source of pride. Like, if your ancestors could go through all of this and we're still here able to thrive, I look at it as they have some sort of superpower. I call it superhero blood, right? So I look at it as a source of pride as well.
Let's go to the board. Question coming to you, Melvin Burns from Georgia.
Tanya Roberts Ford, exactly. Stayed in the Florida and now it's starting to circulate around the states because they don't like the way it makes the white children feel today. So they want to change our history.
Going back to the board again.
And from Tara Alicia, she's giving you multiple applause.
Thank you.
So we haven't even talked. I mean, we ain't even digged in the book yet, and people applaud you. I mean, from redlining to the New Deal and all this kind of stuff that was designed to help people in poor, but it really hindered us. But let's talk about your book. So what are some of the things that we can see and hear in your book?
Yeah, so my book, let me hold it up. I got a picture of the Black Statue of Liberty. Mm-hmm. And she actually... I know my ring camera is in a way, but she actually has tears coming down her eyes because it's kind of a reflection of what her children has went through in this country. But it's a book of 40 mini lessons. So each lesson is about 2 pages long. I did that on purpose because we are in the social media age where attention spans are not long. And so I wanted to paint a clear picture as to what happened and keep it engaging and concise, but also a full lesson so that it brings education and awareness. So I start at the beginning, 1619, which is what is recognized as the beginning of slavery. We do know that, you know, Black people were in America and probably in slavery before then, but 1619 is where it starts. So I take us through a walk through history. The book is in 4 different sections, which covers the African-American era, so timeline. So we have 4 eras. The chattel slavery era is the one that started from 1619 that went to 1865. I talked about this a little earlier. It's 246 years, which is 10 generations. And then we go into the Reconstruction era, which was from 1865 through 1877. That started with the end of the Civil War when Black people were granted freedom and started having equal rights. So Black people were able to vote, Black men at the time were able to vote and started running for office and changing laws and were being successful. In fact, there was a senator by the name of Blanche K. Bruce that I like to say is my great uncle. I haven't been able to prove it, but I claim him.
All right.
And so Black people started to, you know, thrive somewhat during the Reconstruction period, but then that was met with so much resistance and terror. In fact, the KKK was birthed on Christmas Eve of 1865 with the purpose of stopping Black men from voting. So that's why they were born, to stop by any means necessary Black people from voting. They were successful in driving a lot of the lawmakers and Black voters away, which had during that 12-year period, Black people went from not voting at all to making significant progress with laws. The KKK came on the scene and other organizations like them. They were successful in terrorizing Black males and the Black community. They stopped them from participating in the voting process. They started putting their people in, changing laws, which is what led to the different Jim Crow laws, the segregation laws, where they put back in place different ways to stop Black men from voting. So then we had from 1865 to 1968, we have what is called the Jim Crow era, which included the civil rights era. And that's when Black people once again was fighting for their freedoms to try to vote and have equal rights. That was when we had the period of lynchings, all sorts of things. And then beginning in 1968 to present is what I call the modern day era, which is what we're living in now, which we have been able to gain many rights thanks to our civil rights leaders. But yeah, we still see disparities in all American institutions, whether it's education, healthcare, financial institutions, you name it. So
housing, here we are. Yeah, housing, you name it. We have to go to the board. Okay. A lot of stuff going on here.
Okay, we got a lot of comments. Mr. Smith just, and you've answered some of his questions about some of your topics. Tanya Roberts Ford says she's loving it. OJ Williams is giving you the, you know, from 103.7 The Beat. This book is a must have for our youth. It's an easy read and will light that fire in our youth. Adults will also walk away more informed. This book can become very well, this book can very well become a curriculum in schools. Mike Lantry Smith again, I think.
From Houston, Texas.
OJ Williams says, great book. Trace, I want to ask you a question, because how do we get a younger generation doesn't always seem interested? Now, I know you talked about shortening, I like where you say you shorten your lessons down for that, you know, that Gen Z attention span.
Yeah.
But as you talk about your book and give presentation, you know, you have younger family members, how have you been able to get them to kind of, hey, this was kind of important stuff?
Yeah, I think the key is to try to connect to what's happening now. Okay. So I talk a lot about when we see different things happening, like, you know, the death of George Floyd or other people like that. I talk about, you know, I connected to, we've seen this with Emmett Till. The difference is now we have cell phones. So I try to make it a little cool, like we have our cell phones to track it, but I try to connect it, which is what the whole book is about. Like, in each chapter, I connect to what happened to the past, to what's going on now. And I try to do that with our youth. Now, it's not always, you know, the youth are definitely interested in other topics. So I kind of sit them down, the ones in my family, and talk about it anyway. Like that. I've turned into my dad. But I try to really make it interesting. I try to hit on points, and I try to not always cram it down their throat, but related to current events. So if I see something happen, try to, you know, make a direct line back speaking to of something current, that happened in history.
Speaking of current events, we were just talking about something that happened at a basketball game where a couple girls got in fight, and they don't understand that fighting, that was instilled back in years ago to hate colors. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with the incident that you're referring to. So was it a group of minorities?
Yeah, fighting? Well, yeah, we fighting against each other.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you think about it, it was kind of always instilled the good Black people versus the bad Black people, right? And that goes back to slavery, whether you were in the house or you're on the field or your skin color. So I feel like a lot of that was ingrained into almost hating each other, not seeing the value. Some of that was picked up from others. And then also judging each other on superficial things, whether it's your skin tone. And then even when, you know, Black people did start formally being educated after the Civil War, during the Reconstruction period, then it was almost like a division put up then. Oh, you think you're better because you're educated and I'm not. So I just feel like it's been a lot of ingrained hate that was learned from others and is still into us. And I think it's unfortunate, because if you also study history, it shows that when we band together, we're powerful. So if you think about the Montgomery bus boycott, right, they banded together and changed the system. That's what really made the civil rights movement successful. They did not participate in the busing system for over a year, and things changed. So I like to, like I said, I like to always connect. If we knew the power in sticking together and utilizing that power and staying consistent and committed and persistent, because we give up real quick, this generation, myself included.
And you look at that bus when that strike, when they people would walk miles every day or get rides from other people just to stick together.
And I will also say this, it wasn't 100% of Black people that participated. So you don't need everybody. You need your committed crew to change things, because it's always, no matter what, going to be naysayers. Mm. And some people are afraid to shake up the system, right? But if you get enough people on your team and you stay committed to a cause, you can see change.
Wow. Pastor Burns.
Trace, as you're doing your research for your book, were there some stories, things you came across where you kind of realized, hey, this is pretty different than the way I always heard it, or even I've been hearing it all these years, or even taught? Did that occur in your research?
Absolutely. Two that stand out for sure is when we talk about Abraham Lincoln freeing the slaves. And, you know, he gets so much credit for freeing the slaves. And thank goodness for the Emancipation Proclamation, right? But he issued that as a threat to get the Southern Confederates to come back to join the Union. So he basically said he wanted to create a compromise for the issue of slavery, not necessarily free the slaves, but he basically said, if you don't come back and join the Union by, I think it was off the top of my head, I think it was April 1865, it was either January 1865 or April, then we're going to free your slaves. 1863, I'm sorry. And he thought that that would persuade them to come back and come up with a compromise for slavery. So when they didn't, they basically called his bluff. They didn't come back, and then he ended up freeing the slaves in the southern states. But they were also enslaved population in border states. So those were states that were helping the Union, the northern side, that also owned slaves. So they ended up fighting for a war to free slaves while having slaves, which is why we needed the 13th Amendment, which freed all enslaved people.
Very good.
So that was a shock, because I had, you know, I thought that Abe Lincoln's purpose was to free the slaves, but no, it was to get a compromise on slavery. And then the 40 acres and a mule, when I really looked into that and discovered that the land was given to Black people for a short amount of time, but then given back to the Confederates, which was the same people that started the Civil War. So think about if the insurrectionists had been successful, the insurrectionists of January 6, 2021 had been successful with busting up the Capitol, right? And then they get awarded with land, right? So
I wouldn't say that too loud. People are having ideas. Don't you want to give people ideas now?
I mean, we're not seeing too many harsh punishments for that. So once again, I look at that as a history repeating itself.
All right,
but those were two things that really like stood out to me when I was researching the book, and it's so many other things, but yeah.
Tanya Roberts Ford says, it's so unfortunate that Black people don't stick together today. Every other nationality does accept this. And I like your point, Tracy, about, you know, while some folks are carpooling and walking, you know, you look up and maybe you see some your neighbor on the bus. I don't know, that might not go too well with me.
Right. Well, some people didn't want to, you know, upset their, you know, supervisors, bosses, whatever. So, you know, I know it was a lot of reasons why people did what they did when it came to the bus boycott. But yeah, it wasn't 100% of Black people, but yet the ones that did participate made monumental change the course of history.
You're blowing up the board. Another question.
Okay. Tara, I apologize for not pronouncing your name right. Tara Alicia. If we as people really understood the superpower we have in numbers and togetherness, we would accomplish any and everything we set our mind towards.
What's your thoughts on that?
I agree wholeheartedly. I agree. We see it happening with other races and ethnicities all the time. So we definitely could do it as well.
So let's get in your book. Let's go. You got 40 sections. So let's give us some of the titles of your 40 sections.
Yeah. So I do. So I'm kind of like looking. I don't think you all could see that. But I talk about, so like I mentioned earlier, I have it in four different sections, which corresponds to the eras of the book. So in slavery, we talk about 1619, we talk about the role that religion played in slavery. I talk about anti-literacy laws. Someone wrote yesterday, I'm commenting on someone's Facebook page where they were talking about why did slave owners only give slaves the Bible to read, and I'm like, they weren't able to read. So they didn't necessarily give it to them. I talk about racism justified through mental health. Back in the 1800s, there was a doctor who claimed to be one of the first experts on mental health. And he basically said that if a person wanted, if a enslaved person wanted to run away, he considered them mentally ill and that their punishment should be whipping the devil out of them. And so think about it. he were basically saying that you should be happy to be enslaved, happy to be beaten, happy to have no freedoms, happy that your children could get sold. And if you thought about running away, basically you should, you're mentally ill.
Now, what you just said, that you your face would drop, but a comment was just made just recently that we as Black people should be grateful because we learned trades and stuff. So we should have been thankful for slavery. So that stuff is happening today.
Yeah, I mean, so people that were enslaved were, you know, a lot of them were professionals. We came over here with skills, is what I'm trying to say. We don't need to be grateful for being forced to work in the fields. We already had skills getting here. Most of them were already doctors and farmers, what have you. Most of the first midwives were in the I don't know if it was called like the medical profession back then, but they were experienced when they got here.
Educators.
Educators, yeah. Royalty. So we didn't need slavery in order to become successful or to develop skills. That's ridiculous.
That's smart.
So then part two of the book is about the Reconstruction era. So I talk about Reconstruction. I talk about the 40 acres and a mule. I talk about why the KKK came on the scene, which I mentioned earlier, to, you know, basically scare people into not voting. Then I talk about what led to the official ending of the Reconstruction period. And then we get into Jim Crow and we talk about sharecroppings and lynchings and the Great Migration, when many Black Americans, millions, I believe 6 million off the top of my head, moved from the South to the North to get better jobs. And then I talk about, but was those jobs better in the foundries? A lot of them were very dangerous. So I kind of go into that. I talk about the GI Bill, right? And the benefits that it basically created the middle class for white Americans, but the Black veterans had so many issues with getting benefits, even though they were veterans as well. Then I discussed COINTELPRO. So that was a government, the FBI program to basically stop our civil rights leaders. Yes. And with MLK Day, Martin Luther King Jr. Day on Monday, I think that that's a great point to kind of hit on. So, you know, Martin Luther King is loved now, but at the time, not all Black people loved him, and definitely not a lot of white Americans. And the FBI had a secret program called COINTELPRO that targeted him and other civil rights leaders. And they basically were trying to get MLK to commit suicide. And they had all these types of things. They were trying to take him out. So I was seeing some chatter on social media about, you know, MLK wasn't perfect and people, you know, saying current stereotypes and narratives about him. And no, he wasn't a perfect man, but also a lot of these narratives, negative narratives that we're getting were directly created by the FBI and his haters. And I'm starting to see a lot of Black people regurgitate them with it. Probably don't even know where, you know, they got it from. They did no study on it, but regurgitating those facts. So, and then part four of the book is all about the modern day era, which is what we're in now. So I talk about modern day voter suppression tactics. I talk about the impact of affirmative action and who did it really benefit the most. I talk about the crack epidemic. And then I also talk about de facto segregation, which is all the ways that this country is still segregated. And how did we get to this point?
She said a mouthful.
Yeah.
Wow. So let's go back, because you said a lot of stuff there. So
I covered a lot of the topics.
You covered a lot of topics from Jim Crow to the Great Migration, which a lot of people don't understand. With that Great Migration, as we traveled, so did the hate. Matter of fact, the hate was already here, but it was, I call it closet clan people, but the hate was already here. And so talk a little bit about there was a good things, because there were great neighborhoods that we lived in and we were successful in and stuff like that. But when we were successful, that was taken away from us one way or another.
Yes, in almost every instance. So we hear a lot about Black Wall Street, which was very successful Black people, but it got burned down because a lot of the local white people in the area did not want to compete with Black people, or they felt like Black people didn't deserve to have this type of wealth as well. I think it made them feel less than, because they have been fed so many lies about Black people being less than human, right? But we hear a lot about Black Wall Street, but that happened in so many cities across the country. It wasn't only Black Wall Street. I believe the Red Summer in 1919 in Chicago. So that happened there. I mean, it happened so many places. It was almost like every time Black people got ahead, something happened to make them start from scratch. All over again. So it's just been a cycle, right, of violence and terror and not really being able to get ahead.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that I saw the initiative that you're doing in Holland, that in Holland, that they stepped up and they want to educate their people. Now, they talked about Juneteenth being a great celebration and stuff like that, of having fun activities, but they need to dig deeper and meet. Talk about that initiative that's going on in Holland.
So it's funny that I'm a Muskegon resident, but my book have really done well in Holland, and it's because my employer, you know, it just spread like word of mouth. So I did a lot of speaking engagements this past summer around Juneteenth, where I spoke at the Holland Museum for Juneteenth celebration, as well as ALIDA conference, which is a large conference that happens each year at Hope College. And so I did breakout sessions where I was able to educate, do a presentation about the book, educate. And from that, a lot of people have taken it back to their home organizations and bought books and kind of helped spread the word. So I basically was one of the keynote speakers for a couple of different conferences in Holland. And actually, it's kind of spilling over now. On February 8th, I'll be doing a speaking engagement here in Muskegon with Pathfinders, where I'll be the keynote speaker for Black History Month and talk a lot about the information that we're discussing today.
So we see the initiative. Why is it important? And then Pastor Burns, you got the next question. Mm-hmm. We're sitting up and we're expecting that our kids be taught at school when we should be doing what your father did, sitting down and talking to our kids about our history. Why is it important that it happens?
Yeah, because they're not being taught. So if we don't teach them, who will? You know, and a lot of the parents now, so my book is targeted for middle school age and up, but a lot of the parents weren't taught either. So that's the reason why I wanted to write this book, so that they can have the knowledge to share. So hopefully we will create sharing knowledge going forward in our homes, because that was what was instrumental and pivotal. And not only in the Black community, my book have received so much love and support from other communities, especially the white community. And so I'm so grateful for that as well, because not only do we need this information as Black people, but also so does other races and ethnicities.
But how important is it that they reach out to receive that information?
I think that, it's important, because it's a huge gap. You know, it's like promoting lies, right? Or it's not telling a complete story of what has happened in this country and how you could relate it to your own family. My family, I don't know if you all had heard the story of Bruce's Beach in California, but it was a beach that some of my ancestors owned in the early 1900s. And so they owned property, beachfront property, in Manhattan Beach, California. and the land was taken from them.
Taken.
Just because the local community members and the KKK members didn't want to see a thriving Black beach resort, which is what they had turned it into. And so it was taken from them for no reason, they said, by eminent domain. And so it just sat there for years. And so family members fought for nearly 100 years to get the property back. And we did get it back. But when you think about the lack of generational wealth, it was given back in 2021. So 100 years later, think about the lack of generational wealth and what the Bruces could be today. They could be just as popular as the Hiltons, right? So it's things like that, right, that just you need to know about your family, about American history, Black history, and it is important. And so sometimes when people carry this narrative of, you know, Black people don't want to work or they don't have money or all these stereotypes, my family would be a family of multimillionaires had it not been taken. So it's not like they didn't want to work. Things were taken. So I think it's important, you know, to know this information. So fortunately, you know, I come from a family on the race side as well as the Bruce side that have gave me Black history. And I just assumed that that's what was happening in all Black families. You know, the way you grow up is at first how you think everyone else grow up until you get older, get different friends. But I feel so fortunate to have this information, and I feel like it helps shed a light and shape the world for me. So I want to do that for others.
That's worse.
Yeah, you kind of said it. Well, first, I did recall reading that story about your family. We probably need to do a separate show about that.
So I will say it wasn't my great, great, great granddaddy. It's what my cousin. I wish it was. But just knowing that, you know, that was like the first time in American history that land was given back. And that happened to more families, not just mine, right? We just talked about how Black Wall Street and how things were burned down or taken away. So it's just things we need to know. And like I said, I think it would help kind of shape narratives and dispel stereotypes when it comes to the Black community.
Let's go to Houston, Texas.
Michael Anthony Smith says, nothing new to me, but redesigning your book, good job. And I think, you know, and I know Michael's not being condescending, but he's of an age where I think we're kind of surprised at how little the younger generation actually knows sometimes. Growing up in Muskegon Heights, Michael's a little older than me. We learned Black history, you know, at church or school, you know. So I know I have a younger daughter, and I'm like, why don't you know that already? And I feel like I haven't done my job as a parent, so then she get a 20-minute, 30-minute lecture. But do you find that a lot of times it's almost done by how little the younger generation, you know, with all this world available to them on their phone, how little they know.
Yeah, and I feel like that has kind of been passed down from generation to generation. I feel like, speaking to other people, I feel like my Bruce side was a little unique with passing information down. I think that a lot of families didn't pass it down and didn't share lessons, and I think because a lot was filled with terror and horror, right? But I think it's a disservice that it wasn't shared, because we can't really rely on the schools. I learned some things in school, mostly around the civil rights movement and Martin Luther King, but a lot of these things that I write in the book, I was never taught in school. I just had a passion for Black history. You know, my dad gave me a lot of information, and then I just kind of expound on it. So I am a little shocked with how little people know, but then when I sit back and think, how would they know? Because we were never adequately taught Black history.
Just going to the board.
Shauna Hunter said, can't wait to have you at Pathfinders.
Can't wait to be there, Shauna.
So you would have been the eighth in Muskegon, right? You said the 8th of February you're going to be in Muskegon?
Yes, I'll be at Pathfinders as their keynote speaker for their Black History program. So that's February 8th, I believe, at 9 a.m. So that's one of the upcoming events that I have. I also have I recently kind of launched my social media campaign to promote my book. So if you go to my website at www.thetmb.com, you can see like all of my social media handles. Mm-hmm. I'm asking for people to please follow me. Most of them are TheTMB, but I think on Instagram it's like The_TMB, something like that. And I ask for people to join my mailing list because on my mailing list, I let everyone know upcoming events. And in fact, last February, in March, we did, with the Mellon List, we did like our own online book club, and it was lit. Like, we had people from all races, ages. We read through the book in 6 weeks, and we did it over Zoom. Over Zoom, we got to hear different people's perspectives, not just the Black Americans' perspective, and even within the Black community, different perspectives. And so it was awesome. So when I announced things like that, I personally facilitated the book club. I'll probably do something like that again in the future. So if you're interested, please join my mailing list from the website so that you can know all the upcoming events. But as I was saying, I'm just not really launching my social media campaign around the book. I've been blessed. Like, people have been picking up the book, reading it, and telling others, and it's kind of spread by word of mouth. So I'm just now starting to really promote it, like, to the outside world. So please follow me on that. I mentioned that I'm working with a couple of organizations now on a curriculum to go through the book at their companies. We talked about being at Pathfinders. And then I do also have a very special opportunity coming up with our very own Paul Allen Billings, where he is, I'm partnering with him on the Kids Free Africa trip, where 73 students will be given the book at the Muskegon Heights Public School Academy to do an essay on the book during Black History Month. And then the winner will be able to go on the Kids Free Africa trip. So I'm so excited about that because I really want the book in schools as part of the curriculum. So
we got to go. The board is blowing up.
Okay. Shauna Hunter says there will be a breakout space as well, breakfast and lunch. And again, that's on February the 8th.
February the 8th.
Tanya Roberts says, great information. I can't wait to read your book. Oh, Nefertiti Ray, great information. Love this. The applause and WUVS 103.7 The Beat. We want to thank Reed Muskegon for being one of our first sponsors. Awesome. Oh, Tari Alicia says, oh, wow. Hands raised, praise.
You're blowing up. It's 2:53. We're running out of time, but we really I want to get some things home, and I really want your opinion. And I talked to you about this before, but I don't think a lot of us know our own history, and we keep waiting for our church to teach it or our school to teach it. But we don't know it, and we don't explain that we come from royalty. We come from where math and all these sciences were created, but we're not telling our kids their self-worth. Your thoughts?
I agree 100%. We can't share what we don't know, right? So that's one of the reasons why I wrote this book. And then I wanted it to be an easy read and concise. And I wanted to paint a picture, like give a true like walk through history. So as other books, as many books out there, a lot of it is taking the time to find them, you know, and educate yourself and making it a priority. You know, everyone's busy, but we gotta, you know, prioritize the things that's important. So I tried to make it a little easier as far as when it comes to Black history by writing it in short lessons.
Yeah, you better find it before they take it off the library shelf.
Because you can. I did register with the Library of Congress, so you should be able to request it for libraries as well.
Okay. Melvin.
Tracy, kind of going along with the things Greg said, you do this research. What's different about you? You know, you said the book took a year longer than you thought it was going to take. How was going through this whole process? Writing, or you were raised in history, but how was the process going to change?
Let me say this. Three kids from the essay contest will travel to Ghana with the kids' free trip to Africa program. Three.
And I plan on going as well. So, nice. Mr. Burns, you cut out a little bit.
Apologize. I would just say, having gone through your research and writing this book, how has it changed Tracy?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, it really made me, so I loved history and I thought I knew a lot, but it really made me just almost connect everything. Like every story I see on the news, my mind is always processing how it was connected. And it made me feel like it changed me to think, you know, sometimes we go through life like free and loose, but it really made me hone in on how most things are intentional. So it made me a little more anxious about getting the information out. Like, other people need to know this. As a history lover, that was my goal to begin with, but it just put more sense of urgency around it. Like, we really need to do this. Because I will say I am a natural introvert. Presenting, even though it's something I'm passionate about, Black history, I don't love presenting or doing interviews, but I feel like I have to get this information out somehow, right? So it has made me kind of move from the background more to the forefront because I feel a sense of urgency.
I love how when I was watching you do a presentation, how you want people to be involved in the communication, the conversation, no matter what they've heard, well, no matter what their thoughts, bring it all out on the table and let's hash this thing out to what the real truth is.
Last Absolutely. Word yes. So that's how I purposely do all my presentations. I want it to be more engagement and more like a conversation because that's the only way we're going to make progress, right? And this is very heavy subject matter. But I try to present it in a way that's not threatening. And I'm going to tell the truth, but I try to do it in a engaging conversational way, right, to get the point across, because sometimes it's not how you get the information, it's not the information you're giving out, it's how you do it, right? So it's a welcoming space for everyone. The audiences that I present to is from all races, and I try to make it a welcoming atmosphere while also being truthful and honest about what happened.
Can we put that web page back on the bottom? Thank you. This is how you can get a hold of this book, please. And there are other ways. As a matter of fact, go and do research because type up the name of the book, and you will find that you will see a lot. And let me show you how the book looks. That's the book cover. And it says the system that shaped Black America, Tracy M. Bruce. And here's the thing. She's one of our own that wrote that book. Yeah. Applause goes out to you. Yeah. Tracy M. Bruce. Oh my gosh, I'm just so excited. Tracy N. Bruce, thank you so much for representing us.
Thank you so much.
And we got to have you back on in February.
Absolutely.
All right. Absolutely. You take care.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Take care now. That was Tracy M. Bruce. Wow. We got to have her on again.
Awesome job. Proud of young lady. She's a little younger than me, but I remember her at New Hope. Just doing an awesome job. Very proud of her.
Just claps and high praise and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, yes.
Listen, look, man, just more high praise. OJ Williams. Yes. Okay, so listen, people. Our job is to inform you. Don't get suckered into what's happening where people are trying to remove history from the books or don't want it added to the books, because the people who have the money are writing the books or dictating what goes in the books. And so listen, if we stick together, we can go to school boards and all that kind of stuff and demand that the truth be told. With that said, one more comment. Tiger Pride.
Yes, sir.
Tiger Pride. So listen, that's been the show. It's been a great show. Pastor Burns, great to have you on again.
Yes, sir.
I just got one more thing to do.
Yeah, we didn't get to talk, did we? Go Blue. Oh, man, we'll have to catch up on that.
We'll get Go Blue. Listen, Muskegon, go out and sow a seed in somebody's life. You never know who you might touch. This is Torrey 2, your show for news, information, and more. We'll see you next week. Take care. God bless.